When I go home, people ask me, "Hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? You some kind of war junkie?" I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. And that's it. That's all it is.
Followers, leaders, and true believers, I am here with
Morty Ingram.
Yeah, one of the biggest influences I had in the early part of my career as a Navy CV. And checked into the middle of a deployment in Okinawa in the mid-90s and got sent directly to the Owasi Seawa, man. The best project I think I've ever worked on. And, man, I'll tell you what, though, I can't say thanks enough. I mean, you really helped me out throughout my career. And if it wasn't for your stellar career, I wouldn't have been where I was when I got out. And so tell me about yourself, Mr. Marty Yingling.
Well, you know, I joined in 1980 to see the world, and sent me to boot camp in Great Lakes, A school in a lovable Gulfport, Mississippi, and then right back to Annapolis, Maryland, and I was 40 miles from home. That was probably one of the toughest tours I had. You don't get your request yet to advance to E3 for turned down for nothing. So.
Yeah. Well, then, like, you're that close to home. It's like basically living there, you know?
Yeah, the only good part that came out of that was my daughter, but the, yeah, that tour was quite interesting.
What made it interesting?
Well, some of the things that we did at that CBU, it was in Annapolis, Maryland. For those that's still around that understand what a CBU is, a construction battalion unit, and we had quite the crew. Had a builder chief that didn't know his ass from a hole in the ground, and then had a good builder first class, and unfortunately he passed away in Oki. But we did a lot of projects, but we normally bit off more than we could chew. And
that sounds like a typical CB deployment.
The only good thing about that is we spent a lot of time, you know, back then it was 4 10-hour days a week, and you had Friday, Saturday, Sunday off.
Oh, nice.
Way too much time for a CB to have off.
Oh, especially when you're not young.
Yeah. So then in the 83, they offered me, I wanted to go to California, so they offered me orders to NMCB 40, and then that's when my career took off, so.
Fuck yeah. Naval Mobile Construction Battalion, Forte. Man, I think that was, I was in all four in Port Hueneme. I was in 5, 4, 40, and 3. And I think 40 was probably my favorite. It had a bad rap, but it was because there were badasses that went there, you know?
40's always, you know, 40's always had that rap, but you have to understand the history of 40. 40 was the one of the first battalions in combat in 1943, so it was a historical battalion. I did all four battalions in Hueneme also, and my last one ended up in 3, but, you know, each one of them was different tours because you get to go to different areas.
Right. Different times, at the world, too, you know. I mean, I came in pre-9/11 before a tower fell down. And the rest of my career was, you know, going around picking up the world after it, you know.
Well, you know, when 9/11 happened, I was in NMCB 4 and sitting there watching the news prior to going to work, and I was like, oh boy, just bought a brand new Harley the week before, and it sat for 9 years. So the interesting part about involvement in post 9/11 is that CBs gained a lot of credibility throughout all the services, and the need for them was turned out that everybody understood from all the other services that there is a serious need for CBs. So that was the good part of it. The bad part about it is the loss of CBs. So at any time you lose a CB is a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it had been hard. I was in four with you. Like, you're sitting in there. I'm in C school, you know, and I was on my way, and we're listening to, I think, what, Howard Stern in the morning or something like that. And I was like, I was picking up a buddy of mine in C school. I was like, hey, dog, there's another drunk pilot. Because we had a lot of TWA drunk pilots at the time. So I'm like, okay. Another drunk pilot. He hit a tower. And then the next one, I'm like, I don't think this is a drunk pilot, bro. This is some crazy shit. By the time we get to class, you know, a third one already hit, and just that's when shit got real, you know? Like, yeah, man.
Yeah, so when we got, you know, I figured I better get to the base quick, you know, because you sit there and first thing you're going to do is lock down the gates and you're never going to get in. So, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, they went to ThreatCon Alpha and started searching everybody and double checking vehicles, and it took forever to get on base, but that's what they had to do. And then once the president figured out what our response would be, next thing you know, I was sitting in Kuwait waiting to cross the border to Iraq.
Yeah, man, that was gnarly. Because we had that, and then because we still carried out irregular missions too. You know, I ended up in Atsugi, of all places. You know, I was like, oh, we're gonna go to the war right now. No, I'm welding trusses on a roof, and yeah. You know.
Well, that was our, you know, we had people in Afghanistan at the time, but we were supposed to go to Okinawa, and we went and did our job and came back, and the next thing you know, we're pack your stuff, you're going to Kuwait.
Yeah.
I think I left like January 3rd for Kuwait in 03.
So before 9/11, what was it like being a CV?
Before 9/11, what was it like being a CB? It was one hell of a good time.
I compare it to Animal House. You know what I mean?
Because, pretty much.
You know, I mean, it gets dark after 9/11. But let's talk about some fun times first before we go down that. Because, yeah, we lost some good guys. But before that, we probably would have lost them to alcohol poisoning, especially in Puerto Rico. And
my first deployment to Puerto Rico is where I fell in love with the taste of rum.
Ugh.
Oh, man.
Yes.
And then that was the deployment where beards went away in the Navy, and it had to be by January 1st.
What year is this?
83 to
84. Oh, shit.
Wait a minute, 84 to 85, I'm sorry, because I just pinned on second class. And you had to shave your beard by New Year's Day, 1985. So there was parties everywhere, beard shaving parties throughout the camp. So, yeah, that was a long night. After Puerto Rico, we went to Okinawa and did a normal deployment where, you know, driving on the opposite side of the road. I came home after that deployment and driving down the road on base, I got pulled over. The guy's like, "You just got back from Japan, didn't you?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "You're on the wrong side of the road." And I looked and I said, "I'll be damned."
I done that too. I just, you know, got back in almost a year ago, March. And when I came back from Okinawa, I had that same freaking problem.
So, you know, and then, you know, some of the parties that you'd go to and you just look around and see all the CBs that you work with and they're just letting their hair get down and it's like, oh man, this is a lot of fun. And then, you know, wake up the next morning and you had the PT.
Yeah.
You could smell the beer, the whiskey, or whatever if you were in the back. It's just permeating out of everybody's body. But they did their PT, finished it. We started doing PT in NFCB 40. It was in boots and utes. Just dropped our shirts and ran, and our covers. And that's back in the old days with greens. And then come back in, fall in, go to class, or go to, you know, do whatever, muster, make it. But that's also when you couldn't wear your uniform off base, and that sucked.
Oh, really? So, like, you actually, like, had to take your top off, or?
We had locker rooms throughout the base that you had to, if you got caught taking your top off and driving out, you got busted.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you had to completely change into civilian clothes to drive out the gate or drive in the gate.
Get the fuck out. That's yeah. Crazy.
Yep, yeah. And that was the pain in the ass. And then after 40, I ended up getting stationed at CBC, working at the security department, and I used to just sit up at the club on Friday nights and stack my car full of people that needed a ride down to the barracks, right? Feet and hands sticking out of the police car. It was like, I think I got 20 in there one time. And the police captain called me and said, "You're not supposed to do that." I said, "It says to protect and serve on the side of the car. I'm protecting the rest of the world. They're not letting these CBs go out in town and get in their car or getting in the parking lot and go down to the barracks."
I remember this was like 97 Puerto Rico, at 97, 98 deployment.
Yeah.
And we went to Papa Joe's, got complete, not you, but it was like a bunch of us, guys were, got completely fucking lit. We were tanked. And as usual, almost every night. So this is nothing new. And, you know, Papa Joe's, that's not a pizza place. That's actually a place that had some titty dancers that usually from Pittsburgh or New York or somewhere and contracted out. And it was crazy what happened inside the place. But anyways, on the way out, you had to go through that gate.
Yeah.
And it was cool because, like, you're talking about the taxi shit.
Yeah.
We would tell the guy, the front gate guy, we'd be like, "Hey, man, like, they're like, how many of you?" It was like a taxi stand. It was many of you are there? And be like, "Oh, there's 10 of us." Yeah. And so, like, sure shit, we'd be like, "Oh, Matt, like Matt, Skippy, yeah. Isaac. I'm not going to name any last names, but you know who I'm talking about. Jeremy, fucking all these guys just completely just fucking shithoused." And we just sat in the back of a paddy wagon on the way back. And we were like, "Could you pretend like you arrested us?" And then, like, so every once in a while, that was my thing. I don't know why I thought it was funny to look like I was being arrested. But they'd drop us off at the quarterdeck and, you know, we'd wave. You know, the quarterdeck is like the front office, basically, of a base for Camp Moskrip, where we lived at. And I remember one time you were the CDO, which doesn't mean can't drink outdoors. You're the CDO that day, the CDO, and he just looked at us like, "What the fuck? You guys gonna be okay tomorrow?" We're like, "You got it, Chief." And he just laughed, and that was that. And then, sure shit, Monday rolls around, we're at PT, and just like you were saying, you get fucking shit housed. But you did it so often, it didn't bother you the next day. You were like Iron Man, you know. So that.
Yeah. The funny part about being on that deployment was, well, my first deployment to Puerto Rico was that I did get a ride walking down back from the OBA with security.
Yeah.
Picked me up, gave me, and for some reason, everybody believed that I had been arrested. The next morning, I'm thinking, why would I be arrested? So the next thing you know, the MAAs call me up to the freaking quarterdeck, and they're like, "What happened last night?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" Like, "We heard security dropped you off. There's nothing in the logbook. This is because they gave me a ride."
Yeah.
"I don't believe you. What did you do?" And the OBA was the old bowling alley. They turned into a club.
Okay. Yeah.
And that was before they built the new enlisted club that you saw in 98.
Yeah, because you had Woody's and Rosie's were the two that we had on that base. Rosie's was more of a hip-hop type bar, and Woody's was more like a country western rock and roll bar.
Well, you know, the OBA, I remember one time, the Canadian Navy was down there, and somebody had started in that, you know, NMCB 40. That's my battalion I was in at the time.
Fuck yeah!
When somebody starts an argument with somebody from 40, everybody stands up. And what these guys didn't know, that the entire bar was filled with people from NMCB 40, and these Canadians started giving the guy shit, and everybody stood up, and they were like, "Oh,
that was." I had a similar incident. That's funny because, like, yeah, the bees, like, bees, I think we live up to the name bees, because you fuck with one of us, the whole swarm comes after you. But if you don't fuck with us, we don't bother you at all. Just go about your business. Nobody gives a fuck. Just leave us alone.
That was my motto. And
yeah.
It was, if you do what I tell you, nobody will fuck with you but me.
Yeah.
Man.
And that was, that's why I liked working for you, because if I fucked up, I'd just be like, hey, Chief, or whatever you were at the time, be like, "Hey, man, I fucked it up." And you're like, "You fucked it up? All right, thanks." Because, if you're honest and you fuck something up, of course you'd give me shit. And then you'd be like, "Oh, it's okay." You know, the funny thing about the bar incident, we had the same thing because Woody's was the one on the top of the hill, which was awesome because you'd have a gravity effect of going back to camp because you're just coming back. You're just, the gravity would bring you back, and there's a SEAL camp right next to us, there's a couple fences that you could, like, kind of squeeze through. I was half the thickness I am now back then, so it wasn't that hard.
And, well, besides the gray hair you have, you were always my favorite redheaded stepchild.
Hell yeah, man. Well, I appreciate that. That's actually an honor, believe it or not. We ran the Liberty bus. In other words, we were the transportation for everybody on that entire base. Mm-hmm. And we had some of the regular Fleet Navy guys. You know, God bless you guys for what you do, but not on this day. And a couple of them were like, fucking Seabees, man. I can't believe those fucking Seabees are assholes. And these guys were sitting in the front of the bus. And me and my buddy Klee, he's a black dude, I'm a white dude. And we used to say the most racially charged things at each other just to laugh. It wasn't like anything serious. We were just talking so much mean shit. But it was great because it was racism. It wasn't a thing when you're in uniform. You're just talking shit to your brother. Well, anyways, that's the opposite effect when somebody says something about Seabees, because these guys said that in the front of the bus. He's like, because we snuck beers on the bus from Woody's. We had them under our shirt when we left. He's like, hold my beer. And all I do is I just see, like, I found out what the term asshole and elbows are from that day, because I just seen his ass in the air and elbows flying back and forth while he's pummeling this guy on the front of the bus. One of their guys stands up, and then next thing you know, the whole bus is shaking back and forth. We dropped him down at the pier, and there's a BU-1, I won't say his name, but there's a BU-1 that was just, he just got out and put a Copenhagen in, just let us fight on the pier, and then, you know, they ran back to their ship, and we just got back in, and we started singing the fucking Jody, the CB, you put my hand upon your toe, yo, all the way back to fucking, back to Camp Moscript.
Yeah, those were the days. I mean, you try to do that stuff now, and you run into a lot of problems. I firmly believe that that if you handle it on your own and it doesn't need to go any higher, then it doesn't need to go any higher. But, you know, there were certain things that you did that automatically went.
Yeah.
But a knockdown drag out, you know, I remember when we turned over with a Gulf War battalion in Puerto Rico in 85, both sides would knock the shit out of each other and mustering with black eyes and shit, and
yeah,
they're shaking their hands the next day.
I think, honestly, like, no shit, I think it's like a lot of things where you gain a lot of respect from the other guys. You get into a scrap, and then it's just like, you know what, these guys are cool. I'm glad they're on our side. You just had a, you know, weird day.
So, so you spend your day being a CB, and it was a very important thing because not everybody can do that. Not everybody wears that patch that says CB on it. And when you finish your A school, that's when you get to wear it. And if you do your time honorably, you'll be always, always considered a CB.
Yeah.
And that's what I used to tell anybody. You know, you finish your time, and that service is not for everybody.
No.
But if you're going to get out in 5 years, get out, but do it honorably. And you'll always be a CB. And you'd be amazed, you know, I check Facebook all the time, how many young people I remember from back in those days that are on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
And it's an important thing that, you know, just recently we lost 30% of our end strength. So you sit there and you wonder, you know, what are you doing this for? Because there's not enough of us to begin with. But some of the most important times I had was, you know, working with the troops, you know, on the project. I didn't mind getting dirty. Roy, and I think you know who I'm talking about.
Hoorah, get you some?
Hoorah, get you some.
Yeah! I love that guy.
We were in Okinawa and that after 9/11, and we were doing some concrete pads with Jessica.
Yeah.
It's still worker type. And I just said, I need you to tie rebar, and I'll be damned if she didn't tie rebar like a fiend. And doing some huge concrete pads, and him and I are standing in there showing him how to use that power screed, and I looked around the back, and I said, hey, Roy, there's something wrong with this picture. There's two chiefs standing there, and we're both in the concrete, and I said, and they're cleaner than we are. You want to go handle that? They weren't clean after that.
Yeah. You were S3 Charlie at that time, the operations chief?
Yes.
For the battalion? Okay, cool.
Yeah. So it was a lot of, you know, working with him and getting to work with the troops and getting dirty and working, you know, like Clovis, good old Clovis, getting to work with him on it. He swears to this day that I had something to do for him to end up in NMC before. And I said, no, I never called the detailer on you, son.
But, that's funny. Yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, Iceman, I was with Iceman at the 31st. You and I were at the we left five. Right. The 31st, Iceman's like, go to 4. So I went to 4. He was taking over because he did a lot of the fucking weapons and shit. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I was on the other side. I was the comm shit. Uh-huh. It was kind of like this whole we're going to take over the world type mentality. You know, because I guess 4 didn't do so hot on the effects before. Mm-hmm. You know, so. And then Austin, one of my heroes, man.
Austin P.
He was like, fucking, hey, come on in. So... So I took that gig, and then
we're moving stuff.
Okay. So yeah, I took that gig, you know, and it's probably one of the best things for me, you know, going to 4 right after that.
Good old Austin. For some reason, we had a guy with the same name in the battalion, same exact name, and I had to send somebody to Diego Garcia, and of course, we sent the wrong guy. Well, actually, Austin did. And he shows up in Diego Garcia, and Kevin O was in Diego at the time, and old man got the call back, this guy's a mess, right? And I get this email that says, you will no longer make assignments for E6 and below. I was like, what? So as I'm walking out to go see Austin, he's on his way down from Charlie Company in Okinawa to say, I screwed it. He was going into CO to see, I did that. It was my fault.
Oh, shit.
I sent the wrong guy. I was like, oh, I'm going to kill you, Austin.
Because you guys, yeah, because he had that gig before you did, right?
A couple of deployments before.
Yeah.
So. In a different battalion.
Yeah.
He was the Charlie 5 at the time.
Gotcha.
And that guy was a Charlie type that we were going to send to... Diego.
Yeah.
And didn't work out. To this day, Kevin still gives me crap about that. So, you know, if you go back through the years and you think about all the things that you've gone, all the places you've gone and all the things that you've done, I would have to say that I think the most fun I ever had on deployment was in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Everything you needed was on the base. You could go sailing, you could go jet skiing. You didn't really have to go out in town unless you wanted to.
Right.
And, of course, you wanted to go out and have the local cuisine and meet people and do all that other stuff. But for MWR purposes, everything was there. You know, it was one of the coolest bases and camps that I've ever, you know, went to, you know, considering the Cheese Barracks is right there on the water.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was awesome. And Charlie was right on the other side of that.
Yeah.
And that was one thing I loved about it because, I mean, every night you got water on the rocks. You know, and we were doing it was cool because we were doing the senior enlisted dying facility
mm-hmm.
right before I went to Honduras. You know, I was tying steel on that thing, and it was just like I walked out my doors at work mm-hmm. so I could walk, you know, I'd just take a break, I'd fucking go grab a Coke, grab mm-hmm. a pop out of my refrigerator because, of course, it was only a pop I was drinking on the job, and then, yeah, and go back to work that way. It was good times, and shit, I remember
one time we had this guy named George Washington Davis, and this was an 84-85 deployment to Puerto Rico. Somebody had complained about cockroaches in the sewer.
Oh, shit.
So this guy pours 5 gallons of diesel fuel in the sewer and lights it.
What?
Yeah. Blew every manhole up all through the camp. That's 15, 20 feet.
That's more than a fucking an M80. You know what I mean? A toilet.
Oh, my God. Well, you got methane gas in there to begin
yeah,
with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we heard this boom. And I was like, what the hell? I was in Bravo Company at the time. And we go running up to find out. There he was standing there. I swear to God, it looked like it was one of those cartoons where you look like scorched earth. It's just so fun. Luckily, that damn manhole, he had already had that one off.
Right.
And all of a sudden, the flame just come up, fucking singed every hair off his face.
So, for you guys that don't know, you're talking about not just Camp Moscrip, you're talking about Rosie Rose, right?
Well, no, not all the way through Rosie Rose. It was just the camp.
Okay, so Camp Moscrip still looked like the size of a small town in Ohio.
Yeah.
You know, or Pennsylvania, you know. That's basically Helena, Ohio, or Google that shit. It's, yeah.
And then I was like, oh, you want to talk about catching hell for that one. He wasn't a smart guy. It was the same guy that took a header dive into the shit pond in Diego Garcia.
Ugh.
And they were waiting for him with needles to give him shots after that one. Over a $50 bet.
People do some crazy shit over bets. Mine, every time I did anything, had to do with, I bet you won't drink this. Back then, I don't know if you remember or not, but I could, probably still can. I just don't drink now. I could drink anything, and I wouldn't have much of an effect. I mean, I'd get drunk, obviously, but I wouldn't have any, like, side effects or vomiting or something like that. It was fun. And I could drink anything. I had, like, the iron fucking gut. That's why, you know. It's funny, too, because, like, it's sad, actually, because that base, like, you've seen pictures of it lately, I'm sure.
Yeah, I just saw them, some of them on Facebook.
So if it looks like Chernobyl.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it just got left. I blame Ricky Martin for that, by the way, because he led all the anti-bombing range protests, and he was in charge of all that stuff on Vegas Island. And then we're like, we're not going to be in Vegas. Why the fuck are we even here anymore? You know.
Well, you know, we had a huge live fire exercise over there.
Was part of that.
You remember that?
Yeah. You were the 7 Charlie at that time.
And
you
know,
training chief.
I went snorkeling off the coast there where you guys pulled up in that boat and that small craft. And that was the eerie feeling because there's a lot of unexploded rounds around that area.
Yeah, and you can see them. You can, like, look down. You can see all kinds of crazy shit in there.
And then we did the live fire shoot, and that was awesome because the only problem, we didn't have the T&Es on the 50 cals.
Yeah.
And one of the gunners we were up on the hill with the 50 cals. One of the gunners started letting go, and it just dropped his hands down, and the 50 was going straight up. I was like, oh, this is not good. I had to stop.
Oh, shit.
And, you know, here we are looking at cruise ships all the way out there. I was like, this is not good.
Yeah, T&Es are the adjustable traverse and elevation handle. And what it does is, for those that listen to that, that's basically keeping your gun in one spot because you got to lock it in a certain area sometimes. So that way you keep your rounds going in one direction. And that's the whole thing. And if you don't have that, you're basically free gunning like every war movie you're seeing. And this asshole's going all over the place with this gun. I love that because my first crew-served weapon was a Mark 19. And I got to fire live grenades. Mark 19 fires 40-millimeter grenades.
Yeah.
And it was great because, like, and it's going boom, 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 boom. And as it's going doing that, it's lifting the fucking Humvee up.
Yeah.
And it was just so fun.
Well, watching that 50 cal just back and forth on that Humvee.
Yes.
Back as it fires, forward as it recoils, back as it fires. I'd hate to be sitting in that sucker because they were the light-skinned Humvee, so this weapon and the Mark 19 was just spinning these things around. And, you know, that live fire, the CO had requested unlimited ammo. We had unlimited ammo for that. We could have fired for 3 days.
Oh, that was so fun. That was cool, too. And then the MA chief, the one who got in a little bit of trouble there, but he was...
You mean the bosun mate chief?
Yeah. Oh, he's a bosun mate. Yeah. Played the MA, but yeah. That guy. He had a boo-boo, that deployment. But
a big boo-boo.
That boo-boo. But he was like, he's like, hey, man, do you want to blow this up? And I'm like, I saw this satchel. Yeah. And I'm like, yes, I do.
Yeah.
You know, and it was cool. It ended up blowing up Claymore Mines. You know, I was like, this is the shit. So I had if you guys don't know what a Claymore Mine, it's basically like C4 with BBs on it and stuck inside this little thing and says front towards enemy. That part you want to put towards the enemy. And I got to like go back and he's like, all right, now this is a part where you don't want to hold your breath because your lungs might explode. And that's when I'm like, oh, this shit's real.
Yeah.
You know, I was like a little kid with the candy. It was so fun.
That's that same deployment, we did field exercises, company level too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You guys probably were doing that because I ended up going to Honduras.
Yeah.
And that was cool.
That, remember a young builder, trying to remember her first name, but she was standing outside. She worked in training. She was standing outside of the armory. And the next thing you know, I hear screaming.
Yeah.
Screaming, and I come running around the corner, and she's in civilian clothes, fire ants.
Man, yeah, those are horrible.
And I'm just thinking, oh, shit, get a hose. She's taking her pants off right there in the freaking armory compound. I'm like, oh, God, I'm going to jail. And then Isaac come running around with a bucket of water and threw on her. But she's standing there with no pants on.
Oh, that's crazy.
I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
And so I said, somebody go get something to cover this girl up. Because, you know, the troops are walking around, you know, the looking through the fence, and they're like, oh.
What the fuck?
What the hell's going on there? So she, luckily, they didn't get, she didn't get bit too many times, but it was enough to drive her nuts. Because, you know, they get on you, and they wait until they get enough on you, and then they start biting you.
Oh, man. Weird incident. You said that. I did that. I was doing a flagpole. I was part of the guys doing the officer, the CO, the commanding officer discretionary projects. So I was doing this flagpole up the way at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Ran into this corpsman chick. She was cool as shit. She drove, made her 10 times cooler. She was a 7, but I'll tell you what, with a car, she became a 10 right the fucking way.
Well, and a couple beers.
Oh yeah. Oh my god. But no, she was actually pretty cute, man. So I was hanging out with her, and I was showing her where we were working. Like, because this is, like, where we're going to start. Because after we got done with the flagpole, we did the senior enlisted dining facility and shit, which was awesome because you had that little, like, little ramp where mm-hmm. the boats were and stuff. I was making out with her on that, you know, and fire ants. I was like, what the fuck? Worst cock blocker ever were fire ants, yeah. Man, and still to this day.
You remember we went to Guam after we did the invasion of Iraq.
Yeah, I was at that point, after that, you're talking about 40?
Four,
yeah. At that point, I was recruiting.
Okay.
So
here we are, here we are in, we go from Kuwait,
right,
all the way to Guam.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're desert camis, the whole nine yards, and MWR wants to throw a big party for us and the whole nine yards, and the CO said we're not working any Saturdays, which was really cool. You can rent cars if you want.
What year is this?
This is 2003.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so, and towards the end of 2003. And so we get over there, they had that huge party, the whole nine yards. But then all of a sudden, I start hearing about this young man that got popped. The only thing you couldn't do was bring, because the front gate of Guam had moved.
Right, yeah, because Camp Covington got absorbed
into the base.
Into the regular base. It was,
right.
Used to have a standalone CB base. Right. And then,
So you couldn't bring civilians on base.
Right.
He went out in town, met this girl, and he wanted to bring her back to his room. Well, this girl wanted to go back to his room so bad, she crawled in the trunk of that rental car.
Get the fuck out.
No shit. He crawled in the trunk of that rental car, he gets through the gate.
Yeah.
He gets to his barracks room, and he gets his, you know, he's got a roommate, so he gets to the barracks room, and he's getting ready to get busy, and his roommate goes, you got to get her out of here, blah, 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 and he reports him.
Oh, shit.
You talk about a cock blocker. Your own roommate reports you? We just come out of freaking Iraq after 8 months. And he's getting some.
Yeah,
and
probably his roommate met at the Viking or. You know,
I don't care where he met her.
Yeah,
she was willing to crawl in the trunk to get some.
Dude,
and
what the, yeah.
So his roommate, you know, knocks him out. Skipper asked me, "What do we do?" I said, "Well, if it was me, I'd pat him on the shoulder and say, good on you, bro.'"
Oh man, yeah.
He goes, "I can't quite do that." I said, "Give him a non-letter." Non-judicial letter of reprimand, which means when you leave, it gets torn up.
You know,
I'm just like, I cannot bust this guy for a girl that's willing to crawl in a trunk to get some ass. Well, you know, I didn't feel good about this poor guy getting busted. I said, who needs to be busted is that fucking cock-blocking roommate of his.
Oh, man.
So, and CO just, you know, gave him a stern ass chewing and let him go on his way, and that was one of the incidents. Just a woman crawls in the dirty trunk of a rental car in Guam to go to the barracks with a guy that just came out of the desert. Maybe we saved him from getting her pregnant, maybe not, but I don't know. But that was just too bad. I couldn't deal with it. And in some of the other incidents in Guam, there wasn't any major incidents per se, but the parties were there.
Yeah,
know, the parties in Guam after coming out of Iraq, the troops were taking care of each other. You know, the only one bad incident we had is a guy come out of a bar and he got fucking hit with a hammer in the back of the head, fucked him up pretty bad. But he didn't he wasn't the cause of the problem or anything. He just got blindsided by somebody.
Well, that's the thing, like, the Chamorans, the people in Guam, they're cool as fuck, but they're like a small, they're like, you know, it's like a big inner city in a tropical, you know, on a tropical island.
Yeah.
Don't fuck with them. The thing that probably happened was some service member probably fucked these guys. They got pissed off, and then they fucked this dude up.
Yeah.
You know, and he get, you know, just because he's a service member, it's like you're part of the same gang. And I'm guessing, I don't know, but that sounds like the MO of things that happened over there, you know?
Well, I know that the little submarine outside the EM club on the main base is full of sand. The only reason it's full of sand is because it used to get picked up and put in the swimming pool regularly.
Oh, yeah?
And the Seabees don't have something big enough to pick up that weight anymore.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the CO would get a call, and that freaking little two-man Japanese sub's bubbling in the pool. It was not a happy camper. Because after it was filled with water, Seabees couldn't lift it up either. So they had to get public works down there with 100 tons of grain and pull it out.
Fucking Guam, man.
So, and then, you know, Puerto Rico was always fun to go to. And then Okinawa had the best work.
Yeah.
All concrete, rebar, block, you name it.
You'd be sad to see what it was like this last deployment I was on. Because we had the same work. We didn't have any funding. So I was doing my job for a Delta company, because it was Charlie and Bravo mixed together. My job was basically creating jobs. I'd have to go onto this little computer thing and find out what shit needed to be done on a Marine Corps base. So we'd be in like Hanson, Schwab, Fatima, Lester, somewhere else, doing handrails and doing concrete ramps and expanding a sidewalk for wheelchair accessibility and shit like that. There's no more like awesome seawall jobs, unfortunately.
Well, we did the seawall up at Camp Schwab.
Schwab, yeah. We did Schwab. We did the one on the Wasi seawall. And
we finished the one at Camp Schwab when I was there in 2001. And then we had some other projects at Schwab, but... you know, if the funding's there and the work is great, you learn a lot of your rate there. Concrete, rebar, forming, you know, it's just amazing to do that. But with Puerto Rico being closed now, so now you only have got Guam, Okinawa, and
Spain,
and you're sending an air deck to Guam,
and then the whole Horn of Africa kind of expanded a bit. But. That's not a whole lot of good work.
That was my last deployment.
Yeah.
Horn of Africa. I had never gone to Spain.
Same here. I had the same fucking, you know, I wanted to go to 40 and 3 because when I came in, 5 and 4 were Okinawa, Puerto Rico. And 3 and 40, Guam and Spain. And that was it. And we flip-flopped barracks. It was cool. There was 4 battalions on each coast. And life was easy. And now it's the opposite. You only have main battalion sites now. The main sites you got are Spain, but Spain doesn't have a whole lot of work, so they send debts everywhere. And then you have Okinawa, which, you know, they have debts everywhere as well. And that's it. And the East Coast does the Spain thing, and the West Coast just does Okinawa. It's so weird.
Back in the day when it was 7-7 for battalions.
As it should still be, honestly, I believe.
7-7, you went to all 4 sites.
Yeah.
And so...
Oh, originally it was 4. Yeah. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
You had Spain, Guam, Okinawa,
so the shit got flip-flopped all the time. Okay.
So you had 4 main body sites.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you went and did that, but I had never been to Spain. Looked at my CO and said, sir, never been to Spain, man. Gotta go to Spain. Comes back to me a week later and he says, Master Chief, I need you to go to Djibouti. I said,
ugh.
Africa? He's like, yeah, Africa. You got to be freaking kidding me. So there I was, 130 fucking degrees, sweating the minute you walk out the door. And
so basically, you had 7 months of swamp ass. That's, yeah.
So, you know, I had good people there, you know. I had a good EOC. She's still in.
Yeah.
And, you know, Barry just retired. Don't know where Eric is. Tuck.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, and then I had a couple other, some...
We used to call him Chief Leaf.
Yeah, Leaf, yeah. I had a young lady, man. I swear to God, she stuck a freaking nail gun on the side of a form and shot the 16-penny nail right through the top of her hand.
Yeah, if you really want to get out of Africa, that's not the best way to do it.
Well, I go screaming over to medical, and she and literally one end of this 16-penny nail's here, the other end's right at the, I mean, on top of the hand. And I was like, oh, fuck, are you okay? She's like, calm down, man, I'm all right. And I looked at the doc, and he goes, amazingly, this young lady shot that nail through her freaking hand, top of her hand and didn't hit a vital thing.
Jesus.
I said, now what? He goes, we're just going to pull the nail out. I was like, oh, I'm not watching. So I've seen enough blood of my own. He pulls this nail out, gives her a little splint, wraps her up.
Yeah.
And I catch her walking back down to the project site. I said, oh, no. You're not getting an infection.
Right.
Oh, come on, Master Chief. I said, no. Get up there. So well, she healed up in a week, and I don't think she let a whimper out when she did it.
That's Seabees for you, man.
Badass.
Because you get fucked up, but what else are you going to do? You're on deployment. Let's go bang some hammers.
And then pulled up on this one site in Djibouti. They were putting a concrete pad in. Well, you know, when it's 130 degrees, you don't mess with concrete.
Yeah.
You get it finished. So I pull up with the ops chief. Yeah. You know, I'm just going to go down and see how the concrete's going. Everybody's sitting there eating a box lunch. Now, the galley's open 23 hours a day.
Right.
So they're sitting there slopping on a freaking box lunch. And I said, what in the hell are you guys doing? We're having lunch. I walked over and put my finger in that damn concrete, and it's steaming, burning hot. I said, you better get up off
fucking
your asses.
Look on that shit. Yeah.
If you could get a steel trowel out, and some of you better get a mag because we got a problem. And they were rubbing on that pad for 3 or 4 hours. I said, you guys are going to... And I grabbed the ops chief. I was going to choke him right there.
Oh, man.
I was like, who? You get it done, put water on it, and you go eat.
Man, that was... For me, and that's where I can never say thank you enough, because speaking of concrete and shit, the first place I went to, remember you're talking about the beard day? I show up to Okinawa. I got an 1/8 inch too long of sideburns.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh,
hey, 90210,
who
come
the
here.
Fuck are you?
Yeah,
Bob Dylan. And the thing was, is I got told at Spaces. Because you know how you fuck with new guys, brand mm-hmm. new people. I got told that Spaces was a quarter deck. So I go to the quarter deck, and it was a PT day, so you got to be there by 8, mm-hmm. you know, because of the rain. And so I'm walking across the grinder, like, no, this isn't it. So I'm walking across the grinder to Charlie Company, and sideways rain, because that's how it rains in Okinawa during that time of year. And I'm fucking just getting, it's like sandpaper rubbing across your face, saluting, and you have two fucking anthems, and it's just like, Jesus Christ. And then I finally get there, so I show up a little bit late, soaking. And the people that told me where Spaces was there laughing, like, you motherfuckers. You know, anyways, I got him back later. So you're like, who the fuck are you, Dylan? 90210 looking motherfucker. You know, they need steel workers at the Owosse Seawall. You're going there. And which was supposed to be kind of a punishment, obviously, but also at the same time, you need to put people in there. Mm-hmm. And I found out through later on being doing proper leadership shit. I was like, oh, okay, so the guy who gets the light is the one who's going to do the dumb shit. Mm-hmm. You know, that was me. And so I get out to the Owosse Seawall, and it was like
Keith was out there.
Yeah. We can say Foster. He's because we talked about him on Schmitty's podcast. And Schmitty was a crew leader.
Schmitty?
Yeah, Derek Schmitty.
He's not in jail?
No. He actually, him and Foster own a company together.
I did hear that.
San Diego.
Yeah, it's hear that.
They do some good shit, man. Builders West. And so they had two crews going. One's like basically placing concrete, building forms, and one's separating forms, and then get together on and place it. And you came out one day. I had no clue what the fuck a mag float was, because I'm just a welder from Ohio. And you're like, no, man. Because I thought you were going to be asshole Chief Yuengling that I just met the other day, we were like totally cool. We were just like, no, this is how you do it. And he showed me the proper way to hold a mag float so the thick end was on the outside, and you're like, this is how you do it. And and I'm like, oh, well, this guy's cool, And then from then on out, you're always cool to me.
Yeah. Unless I needed a joke.
Well, yeah, which that's always fun. I remember one time I said something. I showed up. We're going to the range, and I had shitty boots on. And I was like, oh, my bad. And you're like, lose the tube, dude. I'm like, Roger that, Chief. Like, yep, that's one of my guys. That's one of my guys right here. That's one of my guys. And he used to do the Darth Vader theme song every time he walked around.
Oh, man, I hated that.
And then I would meet people in the smoking section. And like, oh, you work for Chief Yuengling? Hey, when you go in the office, do me this favor. Go, bum, 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 bum. And if he says anything, tell him Josh made me do it.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, I think...
That stuck for a long time.
Well, yeah, of course it did. And at your retirement, I hit Dougie Heiner up, and I was like, hey, Doug, hey, man, at the end of his retirement, do you think he can play the Imperial Death March? What happened at the end of your retirement, man?
It was played.
Goddamn right it was.
Yeah, it was... My retirement was a little longer than I expected it to be, but...
That was awesome.
You try to think about what you're going to say to retirement, and you just go, you know what? Fuck it. I acknowledge the folks there and my family, and I just said, these guys have been out here way too long. And I'm talking about the guys that were in a battalion, that were standing out there in the back. And I said, no, I'm not going to stand here and talk for 20 minutes. And that was a long fucking weekend. I had the chief's cabin out in Point Magoo. And the only thing anybody brought me was Captain Morgan and Diet Coke.
Nice.
And I did my best to drink every bit of it.
Yeah, I was in Virginia Beach stationed there, and I was just starting to do a lot of comedy at the time. So I flew out, did your retirement, then I was hanging at the Comedy Store that weekend. So that worked out perfect.
Did you... Were you at the CBU?
I was at 202 at the time.
202.
I was at Charlie 3 over there.
Was Dave Robb over there then?
I'm not sure. No, I don't think so.
Senior chief?
Mm-mm, nope.
Oh, okay. He probably retired by then.
No. Mike. He was Big Mike. The Grim Reaper. That guy.
No.
Sigler.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mike Sigler. He was...
My cat team castaway.
That guy... Jerome, this one cat, they made me the chart. They're like, he knew his shit, and basically being the go-to guy. I mean, that was kind of, I was always in trouble. I always did dumb shit. I was like a loudmouth a lot of times, but the thing was, I knew my shit and I knew when to stop being an asshole.
Really?
No, I didn't.
That's I didn't bullshit. Think so.
No, but I knew my shit about planning and estimating. I knew how to do concrete and weld. That really kept me in the game.
Well, that kept you from going to the man. Because
yeah.
Nobody wanted to see you lose money. They just wanted you to just go to work. And then work, That was never a problem with you. So, if you had a job, you did it. And that was a good thing. But most CBs are that way. I mean, here's the important thing about CBs. If you give them the materials, give them the tools, you give them the... equipment,
yeah,
and the people.
See you tomorrow. Yeah. Carrie will be in tonight to do your thing. She knows what to do. Salad or
something. You give them those four things, there's nothing but success. There's nothing but success. But you take one of those things away, then they're scrambling.
Yeah.
They're making shit happen with one of the things, key components of being successful. They're still going to be successful, but they're going to work twice as hard to get it done.
That's one of the reasons why. I mean, when we first started talking about this, you said Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, CB's had off, which that's fucking horrible. You got to be gainfully employed, man, and if you're not, that's why at my first home port, we lost so many people. I mean, so many people were getting high and partying and stuff, and I was part of that mix too, but... thing was is I stopped, I knew when to and then the command sweeps happened a lot, and we lost some great great people, you know, some good fucking welders, you know, and hard workers, good friends, you know, and
well, I could never understand when you know, if you were told not to, you know, that was, I mean, with some people, human nature is, the minute you're told not to do something, you're going to do it.
Right.
And, but when it affects the rest of your life, you might want to think about it first.
Right.
You know, how bad do you need to smoke that joint?
Well, that was like when I started seeing friends going away, I was like, oh, this is real. Because to me, and I think to a lot of us that just got into battalion, we just left mom and dad's house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we were told not to drink. We were told to not do a lot of things.
Well, that was the hardest thing I had a problem with was if you went to someplace like Rota, you could drink at 18.
Yeah.
And then you bring that 19-year-old back and tell him, now you can't have a beer. You know, it used to be in the 80s, in at least at Wainimi, the base, they didn't want anybody going to Tijuana, so they allowed 18 for beer, 18 to 21 for beer, and after 21, you could order a mixed drink. And they should have kept that.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Only because when you bring, you know, you got 6-7 months of partying going on, and you bring them back, and you got to tell them to stop. You know, you get used to something, and then nowadays we have more and more people living off base.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's you know, you got a 21-year-old buying the booze. The next thing you know, they end up in jail because they got in a fight out in town or they did a DUI or whatever. But the bottom line is you cannot expect those young men and women to come back after having 6 months of being treated like an adult to come back to the United States to be treated like a child again.
Right.
You are handing those men and women the weapons that kill people, but then you bring them back here and tell them they can't have a drink.
That's the hardest thing to do, too.
You're 18 to vote, but you got to be 21 to drink. You're old enough to be considered an adult to vote for president of the United States.
Right.
Well, we don't trust you enough to have a beer. You got to be 21 for that. But then we not only that's the general American policy that doesn't go out of the country. Then we send our men and women over to places like
Puerto Rico.
Japan's 20. So we send them to these places, and then they come back and we tell them don't do it. Okay,
right.
Drugs, no drugs has been a policy since 1986.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can't go back on that. I mean, you don't hand somebody a weapon that's smoking joints or snorting coke. You know, that's not right. But the bottom line is when we bring these young men and women back, you got to let them have a beer. Turn that club back into 18.
Yeah, and that's where it sucks because you see this every once in a while. They'll come back from, like, Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. Now it's Okinawa. We don't really have Rico. But they're 20 years old, and that was, like, your drinking partner. And somebody saw them drink in their barracks room, and it gets reported. And next thing you know, it's an investigation. And whether he did or not, it's beside the point. There are still people who are like, oh, he's an alcoholic. He needs help. Because he didn't really do anything. He didn't hurt anybody. It's just hearsay that somebody said. And you know what it's like. Battalions are like small high schools sometimes.
Yeah.
Where you do one thing, everybody knows about it. You know, I got lucky in Puerto Rico when we always fought. It was just kind of like one of those fun things. And Don's Lighthouse, got into it with some of the SEALs, and shit got really fun and crazy and all that other shit. I just happened to knock the right person out at the wrong time. And then from then on out, everybody's like, dude, did you see that shit Josh got into? And, you know.
But, well, it's just like Isaac.
Oh, man.
He owes me big time still. Because one time he steamed a little too hard one night. And next morning he shows up and they sent somebody that I'll leave nameless sent him to medical for fitness for duty. I never did that shit.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not how you handle business.
Right.
So the guy that was running medical calls me and says, hey, you really want me to do this because you know what's going to happen? I said, well, how do you get over there? And that's when I was told. I said, send his ass back over to me. So he comes over and I said, you get back to your room, you get back in the fucking bed, and you sleep this shit off until fucking noon.
Yeah.
Eat lunch, and then come back to work, and you owe me a half day. Period.
Yeah.
I said, no, I can't throw rocks living in a glass house. Had that not been done for me years ago.
Exactly.
Okay, I would have probably gone to Mass. But, you know, it was rare for him to do that. Extremely rare. He'd never done it.
Well, and he's a hard worker, too. A guy right. could lay block like a motherfucker, you know.
So, so it was, you know, he never had done that before. And I deployed with him twice. So, you know, it's like, am I going to send this guy for one fuck up to the captain?
Right.
Or am I going to, you know, let him understand and learn from his mistake without losing money and rank? And I chose the other way. I handled it so the CO didn't have to.
Right.
You handle shit at the lowest level possible.
And that's one of the things I took away from you, and there's a couple other people that really helped me out with that mentality. I didn't write a single counseling shit in 20 years. Not one.
I never wrote a report shit.
You know, because all I had to do was just held to a wall. Have somebody held to a wall or do something else. Or sometimes just a simple of, do we really have to have a conversation? You know what I mean? Like, really, dude, like when you leave here, just remember, I chewed your ass. If anybody asks, I chewed your ass. But realistically, you know you did wrong.
And yeah, if I grabbed you by the nape of the neck, you knew you're fucking in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the thing about, you know, if you're going to chew somebody out, I mean, really knock them down in the fucking parade rest on the ground, you got to pick them back up, dust them off, tell them the right way to do things.
Yeah.
And that was the way I would, you know, I would just rip somebody to shreds. But I'd pick them up now and say, look, you got your ass chewed, but here's how to prevent from doing it again. Now get on. I said, this ass chewing is between me and you.
Yeah.
I don't hold grudges.
We've had a couple of them conversations.
Yeah. I don't hold grudges. You don't fuck up the same way again, I won't have to stick my boot in your ass.
I was on a lot of meds, and I was really fucked up. It was right after my shoulder surgery. And then you went to bat for me, and I'll never be able to say thanks enough for that. And that fucking asshole, the one that sent me up, knew what was going on. I didn't have a car, and I'm supposed to, like, get to the whole other side of the base after being one place to another. But either way, after the whole thing was said and done, you're like, nah, he's immature. I remember you said that. He's immature, but he's the right kind of immature or some weird shit like that. And you said that, and then when I got out, you're like, you owe me now, motherfucker. like, because you're, you know, if people don't know, how tall are you?
6'3".
I'm 5'8", okay? And so you did the whole, like, hockey defenseman thing, like when you pull up next to a star, you know, a star hockey player. You're dead to me, motherfucker, you know? It's like Drago fighting Rocky, I'll break you. I don't know how many more analogies I could go, but I could do it all day. And that's basically what it was. And that was the last time. No, it wasn't. No. It was the second to last time I've ever been in trouble. That other time was stupid. It was in Okinawa. And I shouldn't have been in trouble. But still this day, whatever. You know, I just said, Roger that, sir. I did my thing. I said, Roger that. I figured it was a catch-all. You know how, like, some people get nams for dumb shit?
Mm-hmm.
For shit that they probably shouldn't have done, but they did some cool shit in the past? You know, it was the opposite of that. That's how I looked at it. Mm-hmm. I should have probably gotten this mask, like, 5 years ago for no reason.
Yeah.
You know, for at least $30 million that I'd never been written up on.
Yeah.
So I just took it. It was like, Roger that. And then from then on out, never been in trouble again.
Well, you know, you said we're talking about old good times, and, you know, you get to talk about, you know, the CBs have been through since 2003 and 2001, actually, and, you know, there's been a lot of pressure put on them for years now to all different places in the Middle East and in Africa. So it's just one of those things that you've got to watch just how much pressure you apply.
Yeah.
You know, people snap. And it's not a good thing. So, it's like, when I would deploy with the battalion, and I literally had to change my view on, I spent more time watching their actions more than reacting to their actions. I wanted to catch anything in advance.
Right.
If they were not doing well, if they were not feeling well, if something was bothering them, you know. I mean, you put up with all that kind of shit. You know, you're worried about home, you're worried about this, you're worried about that, and you got to think about getting your shit fucking blown up.
Yeah.
you know, on a fucking daily basis. I never stayed inside the wire. I was outside every day. And the one fucking day I did stay in, I get fucking whacked. But that's just the way it goes. But the thing that I spent more time was is focusing on how they were doing.
Right.
And what they were doing. And were they, you know, paying attention to the details. You know, were they cleaning their weapons? Were they taking care of themselves? Were they eating right? Or were they, you know, those are the things you worry about when you're in that kind of situation. More so than your fucking boots look like shit.
Right.
It's just, you don't worry about that shit in Iraq or Afghanistan.
I wish a lot of, and I don't mean it in the wrong way, I said this several times, I'll say it again, is I don't mean, I really want people to get shot at, but I think if a couple rounds went at you, you realize what life's really about and what's really important.
You wake up and smell the roses, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's like if you've gone through that later on in your career, you're like, all right, so I know how to handle this. Nobody's going to die today, you know, right. But there have been days people have. You know, because when you're out there, you know, it's not like you just got an agenda, oh, I need to pour concrete today. It's like, all right, what is truck 6 good to go? Okay, cool. Who's got comms? Is comms up and running? All right, so we have 3 240s. One of them's fucked up. One keeps has a jam feed. So-and-so is going through a divorce, so his mind's not on mission. I might need to have him as an A driver, but he's not going to be able to do 5 and 25s. I got this going on. Someone's going to have a kid, so his mind's not here. We got to raise some money so he can get home because I know he can't pay for it himself. And you got a million things going at you, and it's all at once. It's just nonstop, you know, and it's like trying to watch 47 television channels at one time.
Yeah, it's at a senior level, it's even more intense because, you know, you've got to fight those above you who are looking to make a name for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I would look at people and go, you're out of your effing mind.
You can say fucking.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know. I can say fucking anytime I want. But the bottom line is I would look at these guys and go, you know, I don't give a fuck if you get an editor medal.
Yeah.
It's not my fucking job to get you one. You know, or a fucking Bronze Star or whatever you think you're going to get. You can fucking piss in the fucking fan for all I care. I said, but you're not going to fucking wear my people out like that. And it's just, and it's not going to happen. So even with the normal day-to-day shit of home and paying attention to detail of where you're at, the situation you're in, you know, orientate yourself to your operational area. Be able to absorb all of the information that you're given from the daily intel brief, you know, and understand all of that information, convoy planning, doing all of that other stuff. Now you got to execute. You've done fucking a million things prior to that, but now you got to execute it. And you're driving outside the gate of whether it's Fallujah or Mosul or anywhere.
Yeah.
Kandahar, you name it. You're driving outside the gate. Now the seat just sunk up in your ass. Because you know that there are people out there that want to either hurt you really bad or fucking kill you. So now you're on high alert. And then you've got to expect those young men and women at the, you know, this day in and day out. It's not one, you know, one or the other. You got a convoy on Sunday, you fucking convoy on Sunday.
Right.
God knows where you're at, okay? He's not going to forget you. But you're in a convoy, but that high and low every day wears on people, especially their minds.
Yeah.
And there's really no low because you're still taking incoming from out, you know, from the surrounding area.
Because you're basically the indirect fire, the rounds that are, the mortars are coming into the camp while yeah. you're just trying to fucking sleep. Or you just go have a smoke in the smoke pit, and you're like, fuck. All right, and you hear the horn or the sound, and it's like, get back to a bunker. So, what's that?
Can you take a break?
Yeah. Sure.
Grab a refill of coffee, man.
Yeah.